are back, Underground Espionage, episode 60. Tara, you are back. You have returned from the depths of the operating room.
That's right. I'm already
adjusting your mic.
A lot of fidgeting is going to be happening. I can't get it. We got it right.
We got your tumor out of your knee, but we have not gotten the fidget out of you.
No.
That's okay, Tara.
Well, there's like, I really, to get this telescopic microphone to get into my face so that I can speak into it, there's something blocking it under the couch, and I can't be crawling around, rummaging around
you
under
sure
the couch
can't.
Now. And since we last talked, we had to move everything because our air conditioner died, and then Tweedledee and Tweedledum had to come in and knock a hole in our wall and put a new one in, and then we had like visible holes in our wall for a while. It was really ridiculous. It's been a time.
It has been a time.
Surgery was the easy part.
Absolutely not true, but I know that's how you are always going to present it, Tara. You undersell it all, but I can say for certain that Tara has really been through it. And of course, people have been asking, sending. Of course, you know, we saw you put up a post letting everyone know that it was a success and you were on the mend. But Tara, in case anyone has not seen that, let's give the post-surgery update. Tara, you are in recovery. You are recovering.
I mean, I guess it's not really that interesting or exciting, but it was confirmed as
Listen to Tara already shutting herself down. It's not interesting. She's gone through nothing. It was easy. I salute you for being the queen of the undersell, but you know,
this
is our people. They want to hear how it went.
It was confirmed as pigmented villonodular synovitis, which I guess I didn't realize how rare it was, and I said it was rare before because everybody was just really confused every time I went to the doctor, but apparently it affects about 2 in a million people.
It's something insanely rare, which you are truly a rarity.
One of 2 in a million, apparently, and it's generally affects women, and it generally affects knee joints, but that's why everybody was so confused as to what the hell was happening, because they hadn't really seen it before. I did not get to see a pic. I'm gonna ask the surgeon when we go back to like see a pic of what it was, because I really wanted to have a good idea of what it looked like, you know what I mean, and what it was. I looked at other of these types of masses, gross tumors, whatever you want to call them, and they're kind of the color of like a roasted chicken nugget. That pigment, and I just really, really want to see this thing, because I was picturing more like a Mentos, but it's actually more like a chicken nugget, Mike.
I mean,
so I'm gonna need to see a picture. I feel like sad that I was deprived of the opportunity to see it. And yeah, this is one of those things that's caused by like immune system inflammation, so it's par for the course for me. My body's trying to kill me, and there we have it. But they took it out. I still can't lift up my leg, and
yeah,
I still can't bend my knee, but in 1 to 6 months they're thinking I will be able to do that. So it looks like the fetish aesthetic is going to continue in our lives.
Hey, look,
we're just gonna lean into it.
We can make things work. We can make anything work. But yeah, you know, we did thank everything. Thank God. Thank the God of surgeons that we did get basically the guy who was going to be
the expert in
doing these rare surgeries. Yeah. So we did get really lucky with that.
AKA the tumor guy.
Well, and it is weird. And this is, I feel that anytime you've had surgery, it's like this. But this time as well, it is weird how surgery works,
yeah,
in that you sort of don't know what is, they kind of just piecemeal out what's going to happen, even down to like when you get there. I guess part of it is they can't give you an ETA about how long it's going to take. They don't 100% know,
yeah,
but
exactly.
It is just sort of like you go in.
Am I going to be here a day or what? Yeah, it's like the last surgery I had where we get in. They're like, oh no, you're going to be here 4 nights.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah. And so we knew that you'd be out that day, but it is sort of what they no sell. A lot, I guess, is
yeah,
what I'm
I mean,
trying
I guess
to
they,
say.
Because they don't know. They don't, no
and
promises.
Maybe they don't want to do, maybe that is part of it, so that they don't say something, and then it's it's only going to be a half hour, yeah. and then it ends up being hours, that kind of thing.
And especially like Cedars-Sinai was like a teaching hospital, so they don't have people doing like regular rounds. So it's just like you go in and check in the surgery floor, and it's just everybody having everything done. Did you clock that the lady next to me was having like plastic surgery? She was getting a facelift.
I couldn't tell. I mean, Cedars-Sinai is one of the like best hospitals in the world, basically, and they do everything. And it's funny because I was reading Less Than Zero when you were in surgery, and he talks about his dad getting a facelift at Cedars-Sinai.
Oh yeah, that's what she was doing, and she had her other friend picking her up. But also, that takes a long time too. It's a big surgery. But then there were people from all ranges. So like I'm like, you know, run like dragging my leg and on crutches and all this stuff. And then, you know, we have people just having every, you know, random thing done. Just everybody's in the same waiting room.
I'll say everyone there was nice. So cool. Yeah. And that's a huge, huge thing in dealing with hospitals and this and medical stuff is having we've seen it all like. From
horrible people,
assholes,
so
to like super cool. And I was talking to my dad, who has had, you know, has had and is still having his fair share of medical stuff. And he's like, that's such a huge thing that makes you feel so much more comfortable when people are just nice and just it's a very simple thing just to be make me as the person who is waiting for the person who's under make me feel comfortable, because that is or you know, that is a very stressful thing on its own, because like you're out and yes, this one, it didn't feel like the last one. This one definitely felt like, okay, this is, we're going to be cool pretty soon.
Yeah.
But it still is not like fun knowing that you're under getting cut open. I'm not like, it is still stressful.
Well, no, I mean, it's stressful for me just thinking about something that's going to affect my quality of life for the rest of my life. Because if I'm not able to like walk normally again, that's a huge impact in both of our lives. You know what I mean? So it's a big thing. And then, you know, just people being aware and being patient and being nice. Like once I was in an ER and I had passed out, blacked out from pain, waiting in the ER. And this one, oh God, she was such a bitch. She came up to me and she goes, "Get up, sweetheart. It's not that bad." Passed out from pain.
This is early on. This
like
is like
22. Something like that.
No, I think you were like 20. I feel like this was like in early. Our first year together.
And it was just like, I don't remember what I said to that woman. She also later gave me a catheter without giving me a heads up. She just kind of walked over and gave me a catheter. And I was like, whoa. But I think I said some delicately chosen barbs through them.
Look,
her
you had to do it in your last one. This one has actually been completely.
I might have asked her why she was such a bitch.
Yeah, this one's actually been completely smooth as far as any of that goes. Everyone's just
super
been super cool,
sweet, super nice.
It just got delayed because the surgeon was out of the country for a little bit, but other than that, everything's been totally smooth, and the recovery's been good. You know, everyone been asking. It's so
get itchy.
The outpouring of people writing. Not only to you, Tara, but to me, asking how you're doing has just been incredible, and just everyone just sending their best, sending love. So it's fully appreciated. If you haven't responded, it's only because there's been just so many. And sometimes things fall through the crack. I've really tried to respond to everybody.
And I'm sorry if I have been talking about this so much. It's just been, you know, kind of such a big thing. Feel free to fast forward to the first 10 minutes of all of our podcast.
Well,
but
look, everyone has been wanting to know how you're doing.
I know, but I mean, whatever, it's fine. I'm fine. But I am so grateful for everybody being so sweet and so supportive. It's absolutely humbling. I'm so grateful, Mike, that you're able to take care of me, because I can't do a lot of things. And, you know, it really puts your mobility into perspective.
I've been really enjoying stepping up as the cook. Now, I had to do this on your last one, but that was almost 5 or 6 years ago. And I did sort of forgot some of that stuff, but I've really picked it back up and really ran with it. And actually, I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
So you might not be in that kitchen too much.
I'm did get from a friend who is in Bean Club, did pass along some really amazing heirloom beans. I didn't know about this Bean Club. I want to be in Bean Club. You get quarterly shipments of heirloom beans. Shout out to Bean Club. I'm jealous. There's like a huge waiting list. I had no idea about this thing. But, Mike, we have some French lentils, we have some red lentils, and we have some lima beans. So I think I'm going to have to be like a couch dictator and making a succotash. And then I think you're going to do maybe like, would you rather do Indian food or maybe like a French lentil stew?
Hey, I'm down for either. I'm psyched and down to give anything.
I don't know. We can have like a little discussion, but I think it's time that you're branching out into something of this nature. And I am pretty excited about it, to be honest, because I want to use these beans.
Hey, I'm excited about it too. And look, as always, when we go into the darkness, we always find ways of flickering the light, of lighting a match and burning a candle to light the way. For us, that means doing this, that means working on recordings, and that means watching a lot of great stuff due to the immobility. And we have been watching a lot and a lot of great stuff.
Our eyes out.
A lot of great stuff.
Demon Pond last night. I had been wanting to watch that for
really
quite a while.
Really cool. Made me so excited for Japan. I was mapping out like, oh.
What year is that from? Like 80s? 80,
I want to say 79 or 80 or early 80s or late 70s. But really, really cool Japanese.
79. I had to look it up.
Kind of yokai-ish with the story, with the demon pond and the dragon. I mean, very much like in the yokai story.
Yeah, essentially the princess who is the, you know, dragon of that body of water has made a deal with a local village to stay there and prevent the village from flooding as long as they ring a bell 3 times a day to remind her of her duty to them. So at morning, at evening, and at dusk, the bell has to be rung in the village to remind her of her pact. But she's in love with another prince, deity, whatever it is, in another town, and really wants to leave. But it would flood the village, killing thousands of people. So then she basically consults with all of the other deities in the river, the carp, the crab, all of the mud monsters that live in there, and these are all played by humans, and they look amazing.
Of course, it looks
so,
so
like
cool.
Basically like all the other yokai or whatever they are, and they said as soon as they don't fulfill their duty of ringing the bell, then she can leave and be with her lover. But in the meantime, the villagers have grown complacent and no longer believe in the tale of the bell. So one man is keeping it alive with his beautiful wife Yuri, who again, Yuri and the princess are played by male actors, which I assume are
the same person,
the same
right?
guy, yeah, or person, and then and it's, you know, in that because many of the females were portrayed by men, and I'm assuming it's a traditional actor who is amazing and does an amazing job, so it lends this kind of like eerie quality, but also a very, you're watching something that feels like it's been put on as a play for generations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're looking at something that feels like it's very historical. It's a piece of history. It's an anachronism in modern time. It takes you out of this world and brings you into another world. Even though it's only supposed to take place in like 1918, it feels timeless. And so the villagers then, you know, shirk their duty, and eventually they try to do a human sacrifice instead of continuing to ring the bell, and then, you know, craziness ensues, and if you watch it, you'll see what happens. But it's really amazing. I mean, eventually,
yeah, it looks
I will
amazing.
Say eventually the valley does get flooded.
I mean, that
and the princess
so
gets to flee to her lover. But I mean, all the scenes before that are really chilling, like trying to sacrifice the most beautiful maiden on the back of a bull, and like seeing the ancient town. But the scene of flooding is really it's really stunning, and it's one of those things, just like when you're watching the original Godzilla and you're like, God, the horrors that are portrayed in some of these films of the era are really, I don't know, moving and staggering.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually just looking through this yokai book to see if there is a Demon Pond story in it, just
glancing
through.
Oh yeah, the Snow
it.
Woman.
The Snow Woman and other yokai stories, great book.
Yeah. What?
I really, really like that, and I'm so glad that you threw that on, Tara. It's, I know it's one that's been on the list for a while, and you know us, I'm big believer in making double and triple features, making the movies pretty different from each other, mm-hmm. unless you want to do a full, like we did the triple Russ Meyer feature. That I like doing a contained mm-hmm. feature like that, but yesterday...
And immersing yourself in a world.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we did... What I, for me, is like an ideal triple feature. We did Her Name Was Lisa, which is, of course, today's movie, today's main movie that we'll be discussing here shortly. Magnificent Obsession, Douglas Sirk.
Oh my God, Magnificent Obsession.
And then Demon Pond. And Magnificent Obsession was part of an incredible package sent by a friend who just really loaded us with unbelievable movies, just so generous. So incredibly excited, and he knows how much we do enjoy some good melodrama, and we do enjoy Douglas Sirk, and so he sent that and Written on the Wind, which we also loved.
Oh my God, yeah, and thank you, Kyle, and Magnificent Obsession, I did have to have a glass of wine while watching it, because I feel that, you know, a Douglas Sirk film, you kind of just have to...
Look, we've been really good. We've been patting ourselves on the back. We've been really, really good.
My shoulder hurts from patting myself on the back so much. Yeah.
I want to be with it and to take care of you.
Oh, me too. Well, and I want to heal. I didn't get out of control.
I didn't say you did. I'm just saying that.
Nobody needs a...
And maybe when we're maybe
one legged wild.
It's also
lady
possible that
here.
While we've been waiting for surgery and with you being immobile and me having to be here. It's possible we ramped it up a little bit.
You sound like a little too weaker while waiting. I mean, what the fuck else are we supposed to do?
I'm not judging us.
Is going on? Like, cause, you know,
I'm not judging us.
Yeah, we weren't like doing everybody's taxes or anything. Like, what really? I mean, just recording shit. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know what? I'm cutting us some slack.
I'm
gonna cut us a little
I've
bit
cut
of
us
slack,
all the
but,
slack.
But yeah, I guess eventually the real world will come back in this. Chaos vortex of surreality.
I feel like
we'll wind itself down eventually.
It already has been, which is
it has
is
been.
Really
it's,
good.
But it's been kind of a slow wind down. But no, the Magnificent Obsession, just in terms of visually, but like I think the thing that the Cirque stuff is aesthetically amazing.
Yeah, it's just so great to look. And again, like you're talking about going
lush.
Into another world.
But they always take you to different towns. Like if you're going to Miami, if you're going to New Mexico, like it's always pointedly and deliberately within a space, making that space reflect the town, which I think is part of the decadence of everything that you're witnessing within it. In addition to like the beauty of the actors, the beauty of the scenery. But there's also just an emotional decadence that's also taking place. Like people... just having a what is the word that I'm searching for? I can't think of it. But just like enjoying what they're consuming, enjoying the world with their eyes, enjoying the people that they love and that they're passionate about, and there is just this opulence, this decadence to all of it.
Yeah, Written on the Wind is especially over the top
passion,
and I mean, yeah, just the every scene and every line is just delivered like on 11.
God,
just
so
like
good.
It's so great, it looks so great. And yeah, love Douglas Sirk, so great zone to get in. And but we had a stack of just so many incredible movies from him.
Yeah, only a mild amount of weeping in that one.
Yeah,
just like a small, like maybe two bouts of weeping.
But you know, it definitely been cool to just take the time to really absorb film. Hey, watched Apocalypse Now.
Oh,
better than ever. Just unbelievable movie. It's been so much. I don't really want to necessarily go. I mean, it's just too much to go over since we've last talked. I mean, we've gone in and out of zones, watched tons of stuff. It's been really great. But in a way that, like I always say, that stuff is fulfilling and it's not a waste of time if you're curating and watching things that are going to add to just your palate and appreciation of art, whether or not it's Apocalypse Now or whether or not it's David the Rock Nelson Monster Tales.
You know, oh my God, that was
Jesus.
I can't talk now. I'm busy eating. I need energy.
I gotta eat over here. I gotta watch monster movies.
I don't believe in Frankenstein. Frankenstein's not real.
No, he believes in Frankenstein's, but he doesn't believe
because there's a gravestone.
Yeah, but he doesn't believe in mummies or Tor. wait, what was the Nosferatu? Nosferatu. That's an old wives' tale.
I gotta say, like, that David the Rock Nelson, when I was like, what was that, the day after surgery? What was I doing?
Now it's hard to remember. I feel like that was leading up to surgery.
All I know is, like, I haven't really needed much medication. Like, honestly, like, post-surgery, it's been less discomfort than prior to surgery. So maybe it was, like, right before and I was just like, whatever. But it was just such a fantastic thing to throw on. Like, if you're in a really, like, worried, fucked up mental space.
Yes.
Your
worries will flitter away.
You can't. It's like if you want to sit and try to focus on the thing that you're worried about and you're really stressed, and then David the Rock Nelson is like talking over you, like something about his repetition pulls you out of anything. Like, you can't focus too long.
Yeah, the repetition is what's crazy.
But I love it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, I find it oddly comforting.
Totally.
And even I really enjoy the unwilling victims. I'm going to call them the unwilling victims of his films.
Delilah's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's not like he's ever considering multiple takes. It's not like he's ever considering being like, hey, do you want to be in a picture? Like, nothing is thought through stage. It's truly just him just walking. I don't know, like, whatever the rhyme and reason is, it exists only in his head.
Well, in Devilant, a lot of it's at one of the Monster Bash conventions, and I swear to God, it's about an hour of just him going up to people like, Devilant's gonna get you. and it's just
the same thing over and over, like the same line.
Yes.
Oh God, I don't.
I love that it's funny because on the volume 3, it's Monster Tales is like 3 stories, and then it has Mummy.
I gotta go watch the Mummy from 1923, and then like when he's going through his DVDs
or his VHS
or VHS. Sarah. Okay, sorry, I apologize.
Because this is the 90s. I mean, because it's all,
and he's just going through and like reading the titles of his VHS.
Yeah, Flying Serpent. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that movie rocks. But in the Monster Tales, which is later. It was filmed in the end of the 90s. I think it ended up coming out in 2002. And it is over 2 hours long, which so is Devilant. But as the detective, he's like, I don't believe in Nosferatu, like all this stuff. But in Mummy 1993 AD, which is a little earlier, that also is on this disc, the detective is a little more believing. So it's like he's gotten jaded over the years.
Oh, okay. Maybe because he did some investigations and he never really encountered Nosferatu.
Nosferatu, yeah. I'm not Frankenstein's. And then he's just like eating and then like picking up flyers and magazines and like, I got to watch a monster movie. I'm on vacation.
He's like reading things and drinking coffee. Talking on the phone. I do believe in Tor, though, Mike. I mean, do you believe in Tor?
I mean,
there's, oh my God, why can't I remember Chastity? What was the little girl's name?
Paisley.
Paisley, it's so cute. Oh, Paisley was just attacked, but she fought him off. It's like a 6-year-old little girl. It's so insane.
It's insane. No, I mean, David the Rock Nelson, completely insane. Obviously, we're on volume 3 of from Saturn's Core, which is just, they're all, it truly is. It'd be one that I would be showing to somebody. You got to be a very, I mean, you got to be basically a listener of this podcast for sure. But even then, it is a certain level of insanity.
Yeah, maybe we sound crazy when we're talking about it, but it's, I did find it oddly like the perfect thing to be going on because it really, like, you can try to ignore it. You can try to get past it, but like, I don't know. There's something just that gold about it, especially this set. Like, I was at the third. I really love. Yeah. I really, really love this one.
Same.
Yeah, Devilant. I think at times I've been like, oh my God, Devilant, enough. Like, no, brutal. No offense. You know, you have to be in the good.
Oh, hey, look.
It's fine. You have to be in the mood. But the monster stuff. Yeah. No, I can't get enough.
So yes, we've watched everything from David the Rock Nelson to Apocalypse Now. So we're into Douglas Sirk. I mean, we're hitting everything.
And Apocalypse Now is just like stunning, staggering.
Unreal.
I'm so proud of humanity that was produced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That actually was completed.
Yeah.
It's really just unbelievable at times what was done to complete that film.
Yeah, that like hard to even talk about just because it's so incredible. But it was a really incredible watch, and it was something we needed just going into the Heart of Darkness.
And then Marlon Brando's performance to me like was just perfect on this watch. Like maybe it's just because I was in such a wild place, but
I mean, you were there. You were Kurtz.
But the shadow, the delivery,
that's
the
you.
Sweat,
you're laying
the
on
everything.
The you're laying on the couch.
100%. I just thought it was beautiful.
And it just feeling, you know, you just want to.
It was good.
You want to live in that island and just have someone slaughter a cow and feed you.
Oh my god! And that just like replays in your head. I mean, that one really sticks
with
you.
With the end playing with the Doors. It just. Truly.
Yeah, we watched the Doors movie.
I mean, we've been in a big, big Doors zone.
We watched the Doors and Crash as a double
feature. Well, so I was gonna say that the final thing I was gonna say was that we watched actually the Doors and Gia was the
Gia,
double feature.
That's right. That was a great.
Have
double
been in
feature.
The big Doors zone. Again, so much to talk about. I can't even really get into it, but you know, truly, just one of the greatest of all time, obviously. But before we get into Her Name Is Lisa, of course, as many people have pointed out. As many people have postulated, even before it was clear to people that, you know, what was happening to you is real, people were postulating that maybe we were had some new kink going, had something new going that and even someone was like, I was like, you know, people do kind of look at us when I have Tara in the wheelchair, and they're like, yeah, because they probably think you guys are doing some Crash shit. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's probably true. And so we did have to watch Crash.
Yeah,
and it had been a while, and man, what a great movie. Just such a great movie.
Well, I snuck into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
And when I was 16, because it came out in 96, right? I was 16 or 17. And it's NC-17. I shouldn't have been allowed to be in there, so I must have been 16. But I didn't understand it. I remember watching it. And the thing that I took away was, like, I was so, like, I mean, you know, I'm sure my eyes were, like, saucers. And I was like, God, is this how adults fuck? Like,
right,
holy
right,
shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? I had probably not even seen, like, a porn before, you know? And watching it, I just remember being like, they have sex so casually. I mean, and that was the thing I was just, like, riveted by. I was like, do people just, like, have sex and like have a conversation? Do they like save up a conversation and then just kind of like dryly converse about like what they're thinking about while they're banging? Like that was like the big thing that I
love. That was your takeaway from Crash, by the way.
I know it was. Isn't that insane? But I'm just saying, like, but that's the type of thing, like when you see something, as we've talked about, that's challenging and maybe you don't understand, or something that's meant for adults and you're not quite an adult.
Yeah,
yet.
You're watching something over your head.
You
yeah.
take away something totally, you know, because I hadn't like had sex at that point. I didn't know anything. You know what I mean?
Not until you met me, which is, you know, pretty amazing.
So, it was, but that's why I was just like, is that what people do? Is that what adults do? Do they like sit on their couch and like after dinner and just kind of like, what do you want to do tomorrow? While they're just like casually just like banging. Like in really cool clothes, like you put on some like stockings and like, yeah, I know. I see you looking at my compression stockings, kind of like
fantastic.
I'm wearing right now. I see.
Yeah.
You.
Again, look, look, we are, hey, you know what? We find a way. You know what I mean? We find a way.
Yeah. I have to wear like the equivalent of like thigh highs at all times. So that's been an issue.
And they're black and everything is, look. Tara's doing great.
But yeah, so weirdly that was a takeaway. And then like, of course, like I understood that like the themes of like sexual obsession and really just having danger bleed over into objects and fetishizing an object and becoming obsessed. Like I got all of those things. And then raising the bar on yourself to the point that it is leading you to do something that's potentially fatal, that's super dangerous, all of those things. Like, I got those themes, but not in the same way.
Well, Tara, you could be talking about the movie Crash, or you could be talking about the movie Her Name Was Lisa. Man, as promised, and because of that, we were gifted an incredible poster, original poster of Her Name Was Lisa. We knew that we just had to do it for this episode. And you, like you said, it was like, maybe when I'm all, you know, post-surgery, this would be a good bleak one to watch. And it sure was. Man, mm-hmm. It's truly one of the standouts of 70s porn. Of course, directed by Roger Watkins under the pseudonym Richard Mahler. Roger Watkins, of course, most famously known for Last House on Dead End Street. And of all the ones he made in the 70s and early 80s, this is the one that you're like, oh yeah, the guy from Last House on Dead End Street made this movie. This is his first porn. And it is, I mean, Corruption is definitely dark, but this is the bleakest out of all of them. We've seen. I know there's more that we have not actually seen.
Yeah.
They're waiting for Elements and stuff like that to get a really good version, but this is just, what a standout.
This has no hope. There's nothing redeeming in this at all. Like sometimes there's like a light or a lesson learned or something in it. It doesn't have any of that. Like, this is so dark. And like, Roger Watkins, that's kind of how I think about, you know, his works would be something that's not like, is not teaching you a lesson. The characters aren't redeemed.
Right.
Like, everybody's just going downhill until they're, you know, closer and closer to hell of their own design.
Yep.
You know, and even the people they encounter, there's not somebody trying to save anybody. There's not somebody. It's truly just, I don't know, it's unusual because you expect there to be, a point other than just understanding how dark life can get.
Right, right.
And I feel like there is something just so adult. Like, just talking about adulthood, I don't know why it makes me think of it, but maybe just my perception of Crash. Like, but I do think as a grown adult, you have a better understanding of how bad things can get. Like, maybe when you're younger, like, it can't get worse than this. It can't get worse than this. It can get really bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And life can get really dark, and like, trying to find a way as a human being to exist and over the years not wear down your torch, wear down your light. Like, don't let yourself get ground down into having no joy or optimism or interest or just being in this pit of darkness, as in these films. Like, there is something, I think, interesting and cathartic about exploring that area, but I don't want to be in it.
Yeah, and this one really is the descent of Lisa into her final death is, it really just keeps getting rougher and rougher. And of course, you know, the movie is framed with, you know, that Lisa is dead. The name of the movie is Her Name Was Lisa. So you know that
Her Name Was Lisa. So you know Lisa's dead.
And it opens with the coffin. She's in the coffin. And so right away you're like, what the fuck?
And that was the idea behind the entire film. That's what they built a film around, is that Roger wanted to start a film with the coffin having somebody already being dead and then move back from
it was actually the producer.
Oh, sorry.
But that was the only thing that he had. So it wasn't about, it wasn't the heroin addiction. It wasn't rape, revenge, all that. It was only that it was going to be the main character was dead and it was going to be the flashback. So it's the rest of it is the Roger Watkins-ness of it, which just descends into heroin, descends into just total utter darkness. And Lisa is portrayed by the incredible Samantha Fox,
and that's,
she's so great in this.
She's so great, but that's also part of it, is that Samantha Fox I find her to just, anytime I see her on screen, she seems to be so charming and vivacious and have such, like, she seems like she has an amazing personality. Like, she seemed like she'd be really fun to be around. She seems like, I don't know why I always think of Samantha Fox as just like a nice person.
Well, because she's, you know, I mean, what I mean? It's because our favorite movie of hers is Roommates, and just the way she comes off in Roommates, you know, we just, that's how we think of Samantha Fox.
In interviews with her, she said that she did it because she liked it.
Well, again, yeah, a lot of that era, you know, we do. That is what they say, you know, and even Roger Watkins, you know, he would say, like, yeah, there's some, you know, fucked up people, but there's a lot of people who are like super cool and nice and great to work with. Vanessa Del Rio in this movie being one of them, Samantha Fox being another, you know, people like Veronica Hart and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
it's.
Yeah, Veronica Hart just seems like smart and charming, yeah, and like kind of a goofball in terms of like being doing theater. And then Samantha Fox just seems like she would be sweet and fun. I mean, Vanessa Del Rio too. Like, yeah, it's great.
I mean, so yeah, obviously this is in that realm of like Through the Looking Glass, Roommates, movies that are, there's a darkness to them and there's clearly another, you know, the makers of these movies were thinking about making a movie, and it just so happened that in order to make this movie, that, you know, for the producers or whoever they got the money, people, you know, wanted an adult film. So okay, they're going to put that in there, but they're going to make the movie that they want to make with the sex in there. And so when that is given, it just creates this otherworldly strange film, and Her Name Was Lisa is one of the tops of these movies.
Yeah, and there's rarely a moment in this that feels like a normal porn.
Right. Like, I mean, in the beginning it's sort of a little bit.
Yeah, you start out a little kind of lighthearted.
I don't know, but because truly, right away you go to the model, right?
Yeah, so
the model
scene. It starts off, so Her Name Was Lisa, 1979. And it's like name, or sorry, age, you know, name, Lisa.
It's an over, you hear the a voiceover.
Yeah, somebody asking questions. Age, 26 years old. Occupation, let's just say entertainer, you know, and then you just see a coffin, you know?
Yeah.
So we have Lisa, she's 26. Name, and then name, like, and it's flashes, like, her name was Lisa, off. And so then we start off, and then also in that, like, I don't want to skip over this because it is wild. And the opening scene before the coffin, you just see a Samantha Fox laid out on a slab covered in plastic. She's out on a marble slab just covered in plastic. And it's like an aerial shot. You know what I mean? So like, that's the first like sexy shot, is a naked woman in a plastic bag. So then we go to a flashback. You hear kind of sleigh bells too. Which the music in this is strange.
Well, the music is definitely strange, and it definitely uses songs that for sure were not licensed.
Yeah, there's a lot of unlicensed things, but maybe, I don't know. But hey, we start out with sleigh bells for the flashback, and you know, when a guy's coming to get a massage, and they're like, pick a girl. You have 15 minutes, and tipping is permitted, and the lady at the desk takes $20, and who does the young man choose but Lisa, Samantha Fox. And she's just being great in this. Like, I love her performance in terms
she's
of acting.
Awesome.
And she was like, hey, I don't know what you're doing. No action until you remove all of your clothes. Like, oh, you're wasting your time. You've already wasted 2 minutes. And she's just being very impatient, trying to get this guy to, like, take off his clothes. I love that there's no action until you take off all your clothes. Mike, why do you think there's no action until you take off all your clothes?
I mean, maybe it's just, you know, you got to show me yours, I'll show you mine.
$20
you know,
over 15 minutes, making sure they don't have a weapon, maybe?
15,
making sure
by
they're
the
clean.
Way. Man, that's
15
quick.
15 minutes. I mean, I guess he could pay, like, another 20. Maybe that's, like, a thing. Like, $20 is kind of cheap, so maybe if you need another 15, whatever. Well, anyway, this gentleman turns out to be a photographer, and he was only coming in because he heard that there was a silk purse in this sea of swine, and he had to go find her. So he gives her an offer, and that offer is, you know, for something better. Take nudie pics.
And then we cut to the model scene, which is just right away, you know, you're in for something different. there's a gun pointed at a model's head, and you don't know that the way it's shot. You're not sure what you're seeing at first.
Agreeing, you know, to try something new, and exactly, there's like a sleeping lady with a gun to her head, and then Kraftwerk is playing.
We Are the Robots, and I want to say Kraftwerk might also be in Pink Ladies. I can't remember. I feel like Kraftwerk's in one of the other Roger Watkins movies, but yeah, you got Kraftwerk, you got Led Zeppelin. I want to say
disco.
Steve Winwood, or whoever does the... There's another one that's like, oh, yeah, clearly, yes, they were definitely licensed.
Yeah, 100%.
But having the robots play during this model scene is truly, like, one of the best scenes. Because at one point, then there's blood. You know, obviously staged blood for this photo shoot with the gun and the close-ups of the women's faces and We Are the Robots playing. Absolutely great scene.
And it's only wide shots and extreme close-up. Like, close-up doesn't explain it. It's like, there'll be just a giant nipple and then a face with blood on it. And then the nipple has blood smeared on it. And then a gun to someone's head. And then a hand with blood running down. And it's all, like, graphic, you know, singular colors in the background. Like, teal, off-white. Like, it's really strange. You know what I mean? Like, it's to the point where you're like, what the fuck am I watching? And and the whole thing is just like, you're going to watch Her Name Was Lisa and just be like, were people supposed to jerk off to this? Like, I just feel like it was supposed to just confuse you that aroused you, and then you'd go home and jerk off later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think maybe that was the thing.
Well, like, I think some of the best, some of our favorite ones, like we've just said, Roommates, Through the Looking Glass, this all have that quality.
To get you to like a psychological state of mind.
I think it's more, yeah.
But it's really wild. And then like, yeah, there's blood pouring down someone's face. Then they're sucking it off, the fingers. It's like an artistic nudie shoot. But it is really strange to have that in the middle of this. And it is continued throughout the film of just getting into the close-up so much. It does remind me of Russ Meyer, the cut to the extreme close-up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know
especially,
what I mean?
Especially like in Beneath a Valley of the Ultra Vixens.
Where you can really see like the texture of skin, the downy hairs on a thigh. You know what I mean? Like the
bruises on Lisa in this case.
So, and then she even addresses it like she's like, that's a job hazard, you know, but like she's always like Samantha Fox always has like tons of bruises. And I think some of them are makeup, and I don't think all of them are.
Yeah,
they're truly not.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really, really wild.
Well, I think the first sex scene, though, here is when she
showing off the goods in the office.
Yeah, when she bangs the photographer. This is definitely more of a normal sex scene from this era. Great blowjob. She's fantastic.
She's amazing. Yeah, and he says, like, I just need to know what I'm working with.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And she's, you know, she's saying, you know, we're going to keep this just a strictly business relationship.
But yeah, so the first sex scene is certainly, you think maybe you're in for more of a normal movie of this era. Is he blasting her ass?
There's
in this
a blowjob. There's a cute 69 scene. We got 69ing. It's like an upbeat disco song.
Yeah, yeah.
That's playing, and yeah, they
more
kinda
of a porn, more of what you think of when you think of old school porn,
it's
right?
It's a wine dine 69 situation,
then maybe
some just straight up penetration, maybe like seated on a couch,
yeah,
casting couch style.
Oh, but Tara, I actually don't remember if we framed this correctly, but basically from this first section. What it is it's the casket, and then it's the photographer coming up and looking in the casket, and it's flashback. I don't know if we've established that.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah.
we might have
and
jumped in
saying.
And forgot to...
Like, and
the framing of this movie is the men and Vanessa Del Rio going up to the casket and looking at Lisa's body and then...
Yeah,
the
concept is that, you know, Lisa goes in the casket, and then it's like the funeral visitation, and then everybody who walks up to the casket to look at Lisa is remembering banging her.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I was thinking, Mike. Is that what most funerals are like? Like, when we're laid out, are people just going to walk up and just remember, like, banging you and just being like, oh, I remember that one time. Like, is that what...
We can only hope, Tara.
Is that what visitations are all about?
We can only hope.
We can only hope. I hope they're lovely memories. I hope they don't have, like, we don't have the chips implanted in our brains yet. While what everybody's thinking gets broadcast over a screen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's not, be great. Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe, you know what? Maybe it would be nice.
Or the digital frame is just there, just playing.
Just playing everything that went on. Yeah. It'd be great. One can only hope. But yeah, so, you know, that's the concept, is that everybody walks up. So yeah, this time, so the photographer walks up, and as he's looking out at Lisa, you know, in the casket, he's fondly remembering this wonderful scene. And as this ends, we get, like, fun, like, scenes interspersed throughout, like some kind of like semi spas. Like, then there's Lisa just swimming across an indoor swimming pool.
It looks like a bathhouse.
Oh my
or,
God,
you know,
I love
looks
it
great.
So much. I love it so much. So then we cut to the photographer, and you know, somebody's gonna come in and visit. There's a special guest, one of the people financing the magazine, the guy who's paying for all the clothes you're wearing, all those beautiful clothes you're wearing, and all your beautiful shots, which are just mostly kind of like sheer, like organza teddies.
I mean,
which
fantastic.
Is great. Good idea. I like him. And he says, you know what? He's a hard guy to be nice to, though. He can offer you many fine things, but he's gonna expect something in return.
He sure does.
And he sure does.
And now the darkness is really going to start ramping up.
Yeah, so, you know, we get a scene that's like playful, casting couch.
Yeah, yeah, again, you know, again, relatively normal.
Yeah, relatively normal. Lisa's not taking any drugs. She's kind of sarcastic. She's irreverent. She's all business. She was like, he's like, why are you so sarcastic? Why are you so hard on me? She's like, hey, let's just keep this a business relationship, okay, babe? And he's like, okay. So then, you know, we get a new guy in town who's offering a lot more on the table.
He's going to get her own apartment, but he just expects her to basically just be available at all times.
Yeah.
When he wants.
So we get the initial scene where she's, you know, on set, and Mr. Sweet, I think is his name. Sweet sends off the photographer, and so he's got to do a trial run. So then they bang at the sound stage, and then he takes her to her new apartment and says, you know, I want you to be available when I get here. I want you to be available. All I ask in return is that when you're here, that you're here when I want you to be. You'll find that I'm a very punctual man, and you'll find some odds and ends in the bedroom that I prefer you make use of.
And he's got some really great, just strange porn acting, like just the way he talks and the way he just delivers every line.
Oh, God. Yeah,
he's pretty repulsive, and
yeah,
Tara,
really,
there's a big thing that is very repulsive about him that.
Yeah, I would sew it up.
Yeah, but
if this guy was around,
but
I'll tell
Tara, what were you most repulsed by?
Okay, I don't like his delivery,
but
his fingernails are vile. He has long, dirty fingernails.
Yeah, some 70s.
Maybe he's Nosferatu.
Guys in this, I feel like it porn, but also just there is a. I feel like people didn't trim their fingernails where how they should have until like.
But it's not even like,
because I am a nail trimmer. My fingernails are all, I trim my nails. They're always short. When I see those long, because it doesn't even feel like it's purposeful. It just feels like he's like, I just haven't trimmed my fingernails
well,
for like
line of
three,
business,
four
I feel
weeks.
Like he should trim his damn fingernails.
It's gross.
You know what I mean? You can like rupture something.
It's gross.
But also, like, it's not even like the cute 70s, like, Coke nail or whatever, that, which, again, I'm not an advocate of, but I just, like, it's not even that. It's like some of his nails are really long and some of them are short and they look dirty. Like, they're it's gross. I find him absolutely repugnant. But the fingernails were like, they're like the cherry on top for me. You know what I mean? The fingernails, really were a deal clincher in terms of this guy for me. But I don't like the way he talks. He does like head abuse a lot, apparently.
Yeah, well,
and, you know, and it is strange also to see like porn eras. It's not even strange, like, but it's marked the difference pre-Viagra, Cialis, whatever, Blue Chew.
Oh, definitely.
And post, because
100%
you see a lot more like soft cock
100%.
Than you would normally see these days.
No, that really is a thing. because
yeah,
now,
they're pushing rope a lot.
Yeah, now it's just everyone's just they're ready to rock, and then I'm sure there's a problem with that. I'm sure people have problems, you know.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Doing without it, I would imagine it becomes.
I thought you meant like blasting.
No, I imagine it becomes a problem. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't.
I only once tried a blue chew just because someone had one. I'm like, I'll try that, and it honestly was really no different.
I tried a Viagra. This is way back when, because I used to sell cheese to a drug rep in Kentucky, and she would give me like asthma medication and all this. Drug reps were wild back in the day. I was near Pfizer, and she was like, "You want some Viagra?" Like, I tried it. It just gave me a headache, and yeah, it just gives you a headache.
Well, yeah, I don't know what it would do for you.
Yeah, not really.
But
I wanted to see blue. I took a half. Maybe really I should have taken the whole thing.
Well, this scene though, so the. When she's in the apartment and when she needs to be ready by 10 p.m., this is now when we're in Roger Watkins land, because now we get a great S&M scene. Lisa looking amazing with the choker, amazing with the dark lipstick. And, you know, they have the gimp mask putting over this guy, which is great. So you don't have to see his face.
Yeah, the odds in it. Yeah, that was really nice.
And now we're fully in.
You still had to see his
last house on Dead End Street.
Fingernails.
Land. I love when she's like, you can't come until I say. She's so great in this.
Yeah, so his odds, and that's his strange proclivity, is that he wants to be dominated by a lady. I mean, he's go through, he's a pretty shitty guy. But like, definitely his bedroom dungeon was great. He had a lovely like black and orange headboard, black and red, all the theme, but still somehow had an off-white comforter. I'm guessing it's so that they could get cum all over it. I don't know. But yeah, she's like, take your clothes off now, you bastard. It was so good. I'm not going to let you come even when you beg me. But then it's so good. But even through this entire scene, Lisa looks amazing. They like fill in her eyebrows,
yeah, yeah.
Give her dark lipstick, like the whole like leather bikini, leather garter, like everything looks amazing. Lipstick has come so far. You know what I mean? Like makeup has come so far since these days. It's like everybody knows how to do it now. It's crazy. You used to have to learn the hard way. You used to have to look really shitty for a while and then you eventually figure it out. Now you can just check out a tutorial, but I digress. I was very excited for Lisa to punish this guy because his fingernails are disgusting. I want her to whip him endlessly, maybe like smash his fingers and punish him for his disgusting.
Hey, guess what? He is going to get his, so he is going to get his,
does.
So don't worry.
But then we get a great scene that I thought was really remarkable. And the end of this is when she sits on his face, she takes his gimp mask off, sits on his face, and tells him to lick harder, and we get this extreme close-up of her asshole. And this is 70s. People have bush, but everybody's trim. You know what I mean? Like Lisa's very, very trim. Like, I find it, yeah, it's nice. Like, I think it's aesthetically, like, everybody looks really good. Like, this isn't that shocking pocket where you're, like, you know, taken aback at first, and then you kind of have to, like, get used to it and, like, adjust your brain and be like, okay, I'm good with this. This is fine. It's not like that situation. Like, I feel like everybody's, like, you know, reasonable situations downtown.
But I like when she's like, get it in there,
farther. And then at the end, yeah, like after she makes him blast all over, she said, get out of here and don't come back until your tongue grows another 6 inches.
So great.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, this is great.
But my point was, the extreme close-up of the asshole is so close up, like it was like you could see every nook and cranny, every goose pimple, like every single thing on there.
Just
and
getting in there.
You don't see that much. It takes up the whole screen. It's not,
yeah,
like you see a lot of close-ups, but
at one point,
like,
Tara's like, do you think this would be okay on Instagram? Because no one knows what it is.
No. Yeah. There's this one part. It's
with Vanessa, when Vanessa Rios fingering her.
And the red fingernails are going in and out of her pussy so much, but like there's no way that you would even know what you're looking at until you saw a fingernail. And I'm just like, I think it could all get past the sensors because it's just like so extremely close up. You couldn't. It'd be like one of those like old timey quizzes where it's like, what do you think this is? And then, you know, everybody has to guess. And then they're like, no, it's labia, you know?
Yeah.
it's labia.
One of those old timey quizzes called it's labia.
Well, it wasn't, they wouldn't have done labia. They would have been like, it's a snail it's a, you know, whatever. I don't know. It's the dog
it's
lips.
Amazing.
But no, it's labia. Now with more labia. It's great. Anyway, I thought that was wonderful. This is the point where I was like, are funerals just people walking up and remembering banging you? Yes, it is. But, you know, after that scene, I think Lisa's a little grossed out and needs. That's when we get to meet Vanessa Del Rio in a steam room. They become friends.
I really like Samantha Fox's side pwn. You know, side pwns, it's, you know, it can go either way, but I like her side pwn in the steam room. Did you?
She has a sassy little side pwn. I mean, she doesn't have incredibly thick hair, but she's working what she's got. And I like that they just really go for just something so stylized, so something so extreme. I'm into the adorable side.
You were into, okay, when I said that, you kind of looked at me skeptically, and I was like worried for a second.
No, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't lying to all these wonderful people who are here with us. Like, I don't want to say something that I don't mean. That would be so bad. But no, I love it.
We've seen Lisa take some pills just casually, just kind of loosen up. But meeting Vanessa Del Rio is going to send her down a much darker path.
Yeah, and so Mike, I think this is where the slippery slope starts to get quite slippery. And this is so. You know, we've established that Lisa likes to go to a bathhouse, but then, you know, she's been managing Mr. Sweet. And, you know, sometimes you just have this feeling that Mr. Sweet's going to turn dark. And all the warnings that the photographer gave her come true at this moment because Lisa's at home and he says, you know, hey, here's some pills. You may want to take this. I have some friends that I need you to entertain and I want you to be extra nice to them. So she's like, okay, cool. And he's like, why don't you take one of these pills? They'll make you feel good. Why don't you take one more? Well, you only take two. Why don't you take one more? So again, he's like getting her addicted, doping her up for these guys to come over. And then as the guys arrive and it's kind of sold as, you know, just going to be some gentlemen friends to come over, they're really nasty fellows.
It is a very rough scene, especially for this era and especially just the way it feels and the way it looks. And we got Bobby Astor, you got Randy West there. It is a nasty scene. And she is just fully, you know, committed to, you know, as Samantha Fox, as the actress, you know, she's fully committed to this scene as being the victim and just getting just fully just.
I mean, it's a rape scene. So yeah. So essentially they drug her and then the guys are really disrespectful. They're slapping her around. They're being disgusting. They're being nasty. Like there's nothing. This scene is kind of where you, because you know, you see the S&M, you see the bondage, you're like, oh, that's cool, like she's a dominatrix, like this is gonna be maybe the trajectory of this will be just kind of a bit of darkness in pornography. But then you get this scene and it's just full-on bleak, brutal, sad rape scene where you're like, my god, this poor woman in the situation that she's in, how is she going to get out of it? She's completely exploited. It's somebody's rock bottom.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you're witnessing. Well, which you think is going to be her rock bottom, but
continues.
It's actually not.
Yeah, but yeah, so you know, this is definitely like, now you just are fully in something completely different. I imagine just being in the porn theater, you think you're just going to watch, you know.
Yeah, you just think you're going to like go, you know, maybe blast one off, you know. Maybe the last scene you were holding out and you were like, I'm not ready yet. And you're like, maybe on the next scene I'm going to go.
Because it is even different than rough scenes of now, which there's something different about this scene where it is just like bleak and dark as opposed, like it is just, it plays in a very different way than say like a rough modern scene or a kink.com scene.
Yes.
or you know, there's something different about this.
This one feels dirty. Like
yeah,
it feels
yeah,
so
yeah.
bad. And even like Mr. Sweet's over in the corner, like watching her
kind of jerking is like not that hard dick. I think that's what makes it.
Oh, it's
darker.
So gross. Yeah. He has briefs on. He's wearing white briefs and he's jerking a not hard dick while he's watching these guys. Like, and we've seen these actors before, and I love
yeah, I mean, Bobby Astor's
Bobby Astor's,
and Randy West, I mean, they're two of the, they're classic.
Yeah, but Bobby Astor, by all accounts, is just like a sweetheart too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and, so you know, you
but
exactly.
He's awful in this. Like, everybody is just, you feel dirty after watching. Like, you feel like you're witnessing a crime.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Seriously, like, even when you watch like some like VHS, like shot on video,
yeah,
type
when
thing.
You feel like
you're watching it and you're like, I feel like a crime somehow happened in this,
yeah,
but
yeah,
just in the nature that it's shot and the way that it's done, you just don't, it feels bad. And this is so bad. Like, it feels so, like, you feel for Lisa. Like, it doesn't feel like it's played off in some sort of like sex play way. It just feels wrong. You know, and that's when you're like, her name is Lisa, and it's downhill from here, right?
Yeah.
Like, it really, and you think this is going to be it. Because after this scene happens, then, you know, she's going, you know, Lisa is going to the steam room and encounters Vanessa Del Rio.
Now, there is a sweet scene between the two of them.
But this is where you think it's going to turn around for
yeah.
Lisa, because they have this sweet scene, you know, and they meet, and they kind of do this, like, you know, before ASMR was a thing, but they have like that ASMR panting, like it's really close to the mic and there's like a lot of, oh yeah, thank you. Oh,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
so sweet. Oh, you make me feel so good. Oh, it's like great. Like, and they're just like whispering, like it's very sweet. It's very tender. And even Lisa's, even Vanessa Del Rio says, I want you to come home with me because, oh, you make me feel so nice. And you're like, thank God, like Lisa has something going for her finally. We just watched this brutal thing happen, and now somebody who's going to care for Lisa. So then you cut out to the casket, and you have Vanessa Del Rio like standing over Lisa's casket. So you kind of get the next story.
Yeah.
And the next story is a story of revenge.
It is a story of revenge. And like you said, Tara, you don't like this. You don't like Mr. Sweet. You don't like the main guy. You don't like his fingernails. Well, Tara, you're going to get some revenge on Mr. Sweet here, because he is going to get raped himself by Lisa with a strap-on. And
he gets it right up the ass.
Right up the ass.
It's great because, you know, they seduce him. He's like, he comes home and Lisa's like, you know, some people say I look even better nude. And he was like, I wouldn't say that. He's like, why are you dressed so unprovocatively? And then she has these giant bruises. But then, you know, she says, I want you to meet a friend of mine. Carmen comes in, and Vanessa Rio's hair is so fluffy. I'm just like, oh my God, the era of fluffy hair, the red nails, the dark lips. It's so amazing. But yeah, it ends with, you know, her yelling, get it all the way up there. Fuck his ass.
Fuck your bloody ass.
And it's what I love, yeah, fucking his bloody ass. And he's like, no. And I was just like, yeah, that's a cool funeral memory. And I just like, at somebody's funeral,
yeah.
Like, cool funeral memory to have. But you know what? It's, let me see here. Yeah. So now you think, wow, it's all turned around. It's Lisa. It's Carmen. They're going to have like a nice life together. It's going to be great. But the beauty doesn't last long, because Carmen comes home and Lisa's still laying in bed. She's like, oh, it's 6 already. And I guess it's 6 a.m. Is it
6 p.m.?
You think it's 6 p.m.?
Yes.
And she's like, oh, it's too early for those. Like, why are you messing around with those pills? Because Lisa's trying to take some of her pills that she's now addicted to. And Vanessa Del Rio says, you know, it's time to grow up. It's time to enter the major league. Time to get rid of that kid stuff. And just pulls out a syringe and dopes
it
her up.
Forces her, yeah, like sticks the needle in her and basically forces her to be a junkie. Vanessa Del Rio just turns into be like the worst character.
You're just really sick of, I mean, I wouldn't say the worst, but one of the real ones.
They're
all
the
real
reason,
bad.
She basically kills Lisa.
Yeah, yeah, because then Lisa becomes addicted to shooting something up.
Well, heroin.
Yeah, I'm sure it's heroin. I don't want to be judgy. I don't know what she's shooting her up.
But there's an amazing scene where she's like all fucked up and she's just seeing Vanessa Del Rio like come at her through this like, again,
it's like a silver ball, like a fisheye lens.
Yeah, but it looks amazing. I think fisheye's can be one of the most overused things in like anything, but it really works here because it just has that feeling of the POV of Lisa just being so fucked up. Her makeup, there's points where she literally doesn't have makeup. Her face is all bruised. She's all bruised.
And she looks so pretty though, like without her makeup, but they do make her look worse. Like they put like bruises on her face and like strange colors to make her look like she's like just fucked. So right when you think that maybe things have turned around, it just descends into darkness. So then after Carmen, you know, turns her into an addict and is just like
Rio's character's name is
Carmen, like tormenting her, and you're seeing all these like messed up, and again in a non-sexual way too, it's just like in this tormenting, like I'm sick of you, I'm done with you, like all the sweetness is gone. And then she sends in some couple to like have sex with Lisa while Lisa's like all messed up, and they're playing Dazed and Confused.
Yeah. See, and it works perfectly.
Guy comes in and he's like, "Hey," and it's all just like, "Hey," you know, like that voice changer. This is my wife, Marie.
Yeah.
And then we have like slow motion scenes, though. Like we have slow mo jizz, and it somehow makes it like even more dark.
Yeah.
Than anything before is just like the like blast shots are just like woo. And just like coming out like in the most like confused way. And then Lisa just ends up just looking in the mirror and crying. We get like a grim crying in the mirror, like reflective, like what's my life scene. Like there's nothing like tender, sweet, redeeming. Nobody's getting a break. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, even in roommates, you get a break. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You at least get some couples that are having fun.
Yeah, I know.
Like, there's not even anyone having fun in this.
And eventually, because Carmen has been shooting up Lisa this whole time, and finally she's like, now it's your turn to do it, and you see her handing the needle. And it's like an old 70s needle, which looks scarier.
Yeah, and it's like it's in a metal
holder. It looks so scary.
And it says, wouldn't you like to help yourself? Here, do it to yourself. Wouldn't you like to do it to yourself?
And then the funeral music. And of course, the funeral music just is like organ, dark organ music. And then you see the needle being handed to her, and then it just fades. And
she says, wouldn't you like to do it to yourself?
Yeah.
And Lisa says, yes. And then the coffin closes.
It is.
And it says the end.
Yeah. I mean, Tara, you put it perfectly. If you want to be sad and horny, I guess this is the point.
Yeah,
for you.
If you really want it to stick with you, because it does. Like it's what I'm saying is like it does. You don't forget this, and it is that type of darkness that feels like the world is this dark for some people.
Yes,
and your world can get this dark.
Yes, it can.
And it can go. It can get dark this way or other ways.
A lot of ways. Look, we've had very, very dark moments this year, especially with, you know, what we've been dealing with, you know, middle of the night wake ups.
And
it has been dark. So,
but never as dark as this. Never as dark as this. This is its own breed of bleak. And I guess it's just so notable that this exists. It's really, and amazing for Vinegar Syndrome to put this out.
Yeah, I mean, they've they've done this, Corruption and Pink Ladies, which actually, I believe we had announced that we were doing this even before. Yeah, maybe we did, or I can't remember. Either way, they just announced
we've been planning for a while.
They just announced the Blu-ray triple feature of Pink Ladies, Corruption, and Her Name Was Lisa. So, you know, we have all these separately, but if you don't, highly recommend picking that set up. But hopefully they'll be able to do some of the other ones. American Babylon, Midnight Heat.
Yeah.
Would be great.
But because, at least now you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah, and Pink Ladies is totally different. Pink Ladies is way more lighthearted. It's way more fun. Corruption is also dark. But this has something totally its own thing. And that's really, you know, sets it apart from 70s movies.
Yeah, I feel like it needs like a warning label.
Well, I mean, look, I think, again, even the poster, which will be in the picture, it doesn't necessarily show you what you're getting when you see the poster,
no.
Which is kind of what's so amazing about the poster.
Yes.
The modern slipcover that came with it, it feels more like what it's going to look like. But you know, we'll have all the variations in the episode picture. But
certainly, you know, the theme, the lighting, so Roger Watkins, like,
yeah,
it's unmistakable.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the dominatrix scene. That's when you really like, oh, we're fully in Roger Watkins land.
Yeah, 100%.
And look, this is absolutely one of our favorites. Again, I don't know how it makes you feel. I don't know if it's something like Summer Camp Girls, where you're just immediately going to bang after watching Summer Camp Girls, or, you know, Very Adult Wednesday Addams.
Maybe this one you have to kind of take a moment and kind of shake it off. Maybe you need to, like, bang it out to remember, like, sweetness and nice things in life.
Hey, look, we'll let you guess.
Figure out your own way.
We'll let you guess how we took it on our watch yesterday. But... pick up the three. I believe all the individual versions are sold out, but it's too bad, because I know for now it's been over 10 years that Vinegar Syndrome was talking about doing the definitive Last House on Denton Street, which has never come out. But on the original Corruption Blu-ray, one of the Easter eggs is Last House on Denton Street. So luckily we do have it on that.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully someday. I mean, it's been the longest tease.
Was fun trying to find it. I remember trying to find the...
And we did.
Easter egg.
I don't know if it's still on versions or if it'll be on the three triple feature, but to be seen, I suppose. Well, we are working on a really cool interview that will be probably not the next episode, but probably the episode after that. Currently in talks with somebody. Very excited to do an interview. It's been a minute.
That's going to be funny. Like, how am I going to sit facing?
Well, it might be by the time...
Oh, maybe I can sit.
It'll
by then.
It'll be a few weeks, so yeah. we're still a few weeks out on that. So not exactly sure what we'll do next week, but like I said, we've just been watching so much stuff that it could really be anything that hits. I mean,
yeah.
we'll just have to see. Maybe something totally different. You know, we haven't done a movie like a Douglas Sirk movie on this podcast, mm-hmm. So maybe something like that might be cool. We have a whole stack of stuff to talk about, so. We will just
something
see.
Like with Barbara Stanwyck.
I mean, we've always talked about doing something like that. So hey, maybe we'll flip it up from our porn smut shot on video and do something. Maybe we'll class it up. We'll see. And maybe
hey,
we won't.
Class
maybe
up
we
the
won't.
Joint.
I don't want to make any promises because we are still taking everything hour to hour, day to day. You just never know, but. Thank you so much for the support. Thank you for all the notes. Again, thank you for everything that has been sent our way physically as well as
emotionally,
spiritually, emotionally, energy-wise. It has all been received with open arms, and it really has helped Tara in this recovery. So thank you for everyone in Tara. Thank you for being you, and thank you for being so tough and just a true, you like I said, you undersell everything. You're like, oh yeah, it's no big deal. God, it is the biggest deal in the world. You are the biggest deal in the world, and the fact that you are just taking this like a champ, tough as fucking nails, just goes to show what kind of amazing person you are, Tara.
Wow. Thank you. Oh. Thank you, Chef Nurse Mike. That was very, very sweet. Well, like, I really appreciate
it's
it.
Very,
like, and
very...
I couldn't do it without you.
Well,
need you here with me.
It is my honor and duty to serve this fire. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for the support. Talk to you next time.